I spent last week at a conference for Unitarian Universalist ministers who serve in a congregation like this one, where at least one of the predecessors committed what we now clearly call sexual misconduct in the congregation. Also there were the ministers from Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and Santa Barbara, California, the places Tony Perino served before and after he was here in the mid-1970s. We talked about the way in which such behavior distorted the purpose of ministry and how to shift it back even now, 30, 40 years later. The conference was helpful and useful, transformative even. I was so grateful to be there, to learn and feel less alone in this work. Almost all the costs for attending were paid for by the Unitarian Universalist Association of Congregations, who, after turning a blind eye to this decades ago, now takes it very seriously. I was so grateful. I am so grateful. I feel ministered to, that we know what you need. We'll take care of it. We're here for you. I'm filled with thanksgiving. And of course, I wish I never had to go, right? One of the other ministers there said it well. She said, I am so grateful for this unwanted invitation. I'm grateful for the conference, for the care of me, and through extension to you, the people that I serve, by the conference leaders, but I wish I hadn't had to go. I want a world where no minister abuses his or her authority and no healing consultations or conferences are required. Is this not so often how gratitude works? Sometimes our most profound feelings are for thanksgiving feelings are for those things we wished we never needed in the first place. The car has a flat tire and some grizzled old dude in a beat-up pickup truck pulls over, changes it in minutes with a smile and a good luck, and we're just overwhelmed with thanksgiving. We fall behind at school or at work. We ask our professor or our boss for an extension. We need more time, and it is given without hesitation or guilt induction, and we breathe easier and are so grateful to be in a place where we are treated like a human being. You heard Wendy's story of the quilt. The survivor of the flood, the tornado, the fire, the illness, the survivor gushes with thanksgiving for the rescuers, for those who delivered food, for the quick-acting insurance agent sometimes, and they are profoundly grateful. And of course they wish they had never needed such help in the first place. Listen, we are saying thank you. Though it is dark after the funeral, though the forests are burning, we are saying thank you. Grateful that we can still run a personal best, but it is too late for breakdancing. We express our thanks. We feel that sense of gratitude when we are struck, aware, blown away, and exhilarated by the knowledge that it could be otherwise. Isn't this the reason for that saying, there but for the grace of God go I? I hate that saying. It is theologically bankrupt. Why would God's grace make someone, anyone, suffer so that we can feel better about ourselves? It's bad theology. But the feeling behind it, that feeling that we have it pretty good because we are aware that it could be otherwise, boy, that feeling is strong and real and true. It could be otherwise. Most existentially, we could not exist at all. We could be dead or never have lived at all. Indeed, given how narrow the tolerances are required to give birth to life in the primordial swamp 4 billion years ago, it would be more likely that nothing was here at all. And that's not even speaking of the unlikely nature of the universe itself. Little atoms hitting each other in just the right way. I can tell you that when I've had close calls with death, a van rollover, when I was in college, for example, I have that feeling of exhilaration, this gratitude to be alive, to have the day before me, no matter what happens. And though I've performed probably 100 memorial services in my 10 years of ministry, I leave every time glad to be alive, glad for the life that was, committed to use my days for good and beauty and justice. And I know so many of you leave feeling the same way. Existential angst can lead us down the path of despair, or it can lead us to deep thanksgiving, a gratitude for life itself in all its fragility and finitude. We're talking about contingency. We are contingent beings. We depend on and are affected by forces we do not fully understand or control. Our existence itself is contingent. Our happiness, our success, the lives of those we love, all contingent. We come to church, as has often been said, to grapple with this sense of dependency, the sense of it could be otherwise. The activities of the religious life, thanksgiving, mercy, justice, the marking of joy and sorrow, all have their origin in this contingency. As I was thinking about gratitude and thanksgiving and this sense of contingency and the theme for our month of November, the theme of give, all month we've been answering the question, what will we do as we transform our lives and the world from inhumanity to love and joy? We will give. I thought about how all our sermons this month, these sermons, these worship services on giving, are really services about contingency. I started by preaching about giving kindness, the way that kindness is a gift, an act of love and community building. Kindness rises out of this sense of finitude and contingency, since our existence, our flourishing, depend on others. Can't we help each other out a little? Show a little love and kindness. Show that kind of decency and mercy and generosity which makes this world more beautiful and enjoyable. David preached about giving money and how we respond or don't to the face before us. When faced with a person in need, we feel so acutely our own contingent nature. We could be that person. Maybe we have been that person, and this can make us recoil, rationalize, turn away, for it is hard to face our privilege and our fragility. But as David urged us, it can, with grace and growth, make us generous, remind us of our human bonds of kinship, connect us, and even change us. Last week, I spoke of forgiveness as a gift of love, and that our task is to give forgiveness even when we feel unworthy. And we need to offer and accept forgiveness, to ask for it and to receive it, because we are limited, imperfect, dependent. And this great gift allows us to live and love and begin again. And today we speak of giving thanks. We speak of giving thanks, and this is all about our limited nature, about that base root existential angst, our sense of, holy hell, I'm lucky to be alive. Look, you can go either way here. You can rewrite that W.S. Merwin poem the other way, with the animals dying around us, our lost feelings, we are saying, curse you. With the forest falling faster than minutes of our lives, we are saying, curse you. We are saying, curse you, faster and faster, with nobody listening, we are saying, curse you. We are saying, curse you, and waving, dark as it is. You can rewrite the poem that way, and it makes perfect sense. You can look at the tragedy of the world and curse all that is. Better that, frankly, than rose-colored glasses, Pollyanna naivete. There's honesty in that rewrite, truth in it. In the choice between putting our head in the sand and seeing clearly, we should see clearly. But I don't think that's the choice. Merwin says we say thank you when nobody is listening and we are waving, dark though it is. We are saying thank you, though we know clearly all is not well. It is about having hope in our hearts. It's about moving from gratitude for the gifts of life to a sense of outrage about how they might be harmed or misspent, but not giving up that sense of gratitude, about wanting to protect the gifts of life and share them with those whose existence is even more fragile than ours. Despite the upcoming holiday, giving thanks isn't an obligation. You're not required to do so. And I know some days it feels like the last thing you want to do. Giving thanks is a choice. It's a choice, and it's one that you make every single moment of every day. Given what time the conference ended on Thursday, my choices were to arrive back at O'Hare around midnight or to spend the afternoon in San Francisco and come back early Friday. So I stayed. Wasn't a hard choice. So the afternoon, I explored the city and walked around, and I took the bus out to the ocean. Walked across the sand to the edge of the water. Waited for a nice wave and put my hand down and touched the Pacific. It's a ritual of mine. Whenever I'm near the ocean, I always do that. And then I stood there on the beach, and I watched the sun go down. Filled with unreserved gratitude to be alive. It's just beautiful. And of course, all these people were lined up on the beach watching at the same time. And just as the sun dropped, the wind picked up. Little rivulets of dancing, flying sand swept past my feet, carried out by the wind to the water. Looked kind of like that. And I noticed this. I noticed this thing, that the sand close to the water, where the waves and the tide had been, this wet sand, it was not blown away. It stayed put. It was the sand farther away, the sand up the beach, the dry sand that was carried off, grain by grain. I stood there, watching, feeling, thinking about the conference, and about this sermon, which I was still writing, and it was so clear, that aha moment. Dry, unwet gratitude will be carried away by the wind. It is cheap grace. Flimsy and too light to stay when change comes, when the sun goes down and the wind picks up and comes off the hills, it will fly out to the sea. But wet thanksgiving, thanksgiving that has been washed in the power of real life, it can hold on. It is not blown away. The dry sand looks very picturesque, doesn't it? Looks beautiful. And we think our gratitude is supposed to be like that, picturesque, perfect. That we have to have everything right before we can say, I thank you, God, for most this amazing day. But that's not true. You don't have to have everything right before you shout it out, thank you. Superficial thanksgiving won't hold. Thanksgiving, which is clear-eyed about our contingent nature, which says, limited though I am saying thank you. This attitude is sustainable. It is the deeper way, the sacred way, the truthful way. Now, another piece of the metaphor. The sand which is blown into the ocean, in time it will be washed back to shore. Maybe not in the same place, maybe totally transformed by the experience. Wet, though, it will return stronger and wiser. More secure, grace at work. The hard way, but still. Sometimes that's what it takes to move from superficial grace to genuine thanksgiving. And you don't wish to be blown away, but when you get back to shore, you say, "Oh, oh, wow, thank you." Look, I mean it. Thanksgiving is a choice. You don't have to. You can choose to curse the world and all that is in it. People make that choice all the time. But ugh, sounds miserable, doesn't it? Truthfully, naivete and cynicism are just two sides of the same coin. Both are forms of spiritual immaturity. Neither sees the whole picture. Thanksgiving for all that is, warts and all. For the fullness of life, for compassion, for existence itself, this is grace and joy. All this month with our theme of giving, I've been oriented by a quotation from Harry Emerson Fosdick, who wrote, "The Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea are made of the same water. It flows down, clear and cool, from the heights of Hermon and the roots of the cedars of Lebanon. The Sea of Galilee makes beauty of it, makes life, for the Sea of Galilee gets to give. It has an outlet. It gathers in its riches that it may pour them out again to fertilize the Jordan Plain. But the Dead Sea with the same water makes horror, makes death. For the Dead Sea has no outlet. It gets to keep. To give makes life. To give kindness. To give to others, to give forgiveness, and to give thanks, this makes life and beauty. It gives us joy and hope and new beginnings, love and justice. An attitude of deep thanksgiving helps us see even more things to be grateful for and helps us see what needs to be fixed in our own life and in the world. To keep, though, makes death. To hoard suffocates. As the quilt maker says to the king, "What good are all your precious things if they don't make you happy?" Do you remember? The clutching grasp, the negative attitude, it kills the soul and it sucks joy out of the world. To give makes life. To keep makes death. It's a choice. You can choose. But I think the choice is pretty clear. My hope and my prayer for you and for me is that we will be people who give. Give of ourselves, our treasure and our heart, who give love and give thanks. Neither naive nor cynical, our thanksgiving will be genuine and uncompromising. In the face of all that is, we will say, "Yes, it is good to be alive." I hope and pray that we will never delude ourselves into thinking that we must be perfect. The world must be perfect before we can have joy or love and say thanks. Thanks. Gracias. Merci. Danke. Yes. Thank you. I hope and pray that we will be filled with the spirit of grace and gratitude each and every day. Whatever comes, whatever is. I hope and pray that we will be wet sand, bathed in the ocean of joy and sorrow, rooted and connected. I hope and pray that when we are blown out to sea, we will come back to shore and begin again. I hope and pray that our thanksgiving, wherever we are and whomever we are with, is a feast of love and forgiveness, a time of grace. I hope and pray that we are, as best as we are able, the Sea of Galilee, that we get to give. In the names of the holy known and unknown, I offer these hopes and prayers for you and for me. May it be, let it be, let us make it be. Amen. We'll sing together.